If you are hearing those wonderful sounds of our fight song, that means you are tuned in to RBLR Bulls. We'll talk everything USF athletics, and we've got a great show ahead. There's been a lot that's been going on in football with the transfer portal, men and women's basketball dominating in conference games. Just a lot to talk about, a lot to get to, and we've got a full house this week. We got the whole squad going, and I'll start with Jonathan Shields. Welcome back, my friend. How you been doing? Do you have a good winter break and everything like that? How's the high school team doing?
We were doing good, but now we're on a little bit of a skid. So last time I came on here, we came out of it with a win. So fingers crossed that it brings some good juju into our game tomorrow. But no, it's been good. No complaints at all. I'm just happy to be back talking some ball with y'all.
Heck yeah, man. Go Bulls. And hopefully it's the RBLR juju that rubs off on the team, and you know, they'll be able to pull out another victory. That'd be great. Last but not least, certainly the heartbeat of this show, Mr. Musab Tariq, how you doing tonight, my friend?
So far, so good. Things are looking good for USF Athletics. And we're still cooking, in the transfer portal, so that's always exciting. Nothing but happy to be a USF Bull.
Heck yeah, man. It's a great time. It's a great time. I mean, we've been saying it pretty much this whole show that USF's kind of on the up and up, and this past week has been kind of an example of that. A lot of really good stuff going on. Excuse me. And we'll start with the football news because that's been kind of fun. And, we'll get to the basketball stuff to finish out the show. But football has been great. There's been a lot of talk around the transfer portal. Obviously, the college football playoff is going on next Monday. It's going to be Miami versus Indiana. Should be some explosive, entertaining stuff. I'm really excited for that game. But USF specifically has been putting in work in the transfer portal. They've gotten even more names than last week. I know we introduced a lot of fellas last week, and they kind of hit the main ones with their two probably starting quarterbacks, quote unquote, the guys that are probably going to compete with that. But they threw in a third this past week, as well as a lot of other really important positions. Musab, I'll start with you, my man. Was there anyone from this recent batch, if you will, of transfer portal recruits that really stood out to you?
I'll probably say, the ones that I like, of course, are the ones that actually have shown, they actually have a lot of experience under their belt and kind of the ones coming from smaller programs. The first one I think was, the big one in my eyes was KJ Cooper, quarterback from Texas Southern, 6'5", 215 pound, redshirt junior. He's got starting experience, led Texas Southern University to their first winning season in over 20 years, racked up 1,600 passing yards, 13 touchdowns. He's got a little bit of that rushing ability as well. So he's a dual threat quarterback. Just excites me because we have a fun quarterback room. We talked about Kromenhawk last week as well as Michael Van Buren. So I'm curious to see, what goes on. And, the thing that excites me, the most about, any transfer is, actually seeing true evident experience. No hate to, those, sophomore transfers who balled out in high school and, were under some, stacked, wide receiver room. Those are still cool too, but I mean, the stats don't lie. The guys, hung around and, he just wants to, move up to the next level. So I'm excited to see what goes on with that. And then the other one, just someone, you don't always think about an offensive lineman, quarterback security. Cash Hudson from Missouri State, 3-year starter, captain. He's got, the leadership as well. So barely any injury history, if not any. So he's always been seen as, reliable his whole, college career so far. So those ones I'm really excited about. And then we got a couple of DBs. The only one that, I'll let, y'all talk about some that, kind of caught your eye. But Zaquan Bryan from Minnesota, 36 tackles, forced fumble. Had a little bit of a season-ending shoulder injury. But, he's got that Big Ten starting experience. We've actually seen a lot of Big Ten names coming to USF. So I've seen a little bit of tape on him. He's got that violent tackling kind of style and fast guy, ran a 10.95. 100-meter dash. So, he's got the speed, got the good ball skills, 5 pass breakups in 2024 as well. So he can do a little bit of everything. So I'm excited to see what he does with USF.
Yeah, man, I'm very excited for this most recent crop. I don't know if you brought him up or not, Musab, but Kenny Odom. I don't know if we talked about him last week. Did we? I don't know if we did, but the receiver out of UTEP, I thought he was a really fascinating add too, because he's been pretty productive. Like, I think he had over 700 yards a couple years ago. And, you know, if Brian Hartline likes him, then I like him. I can't remember if we talked about him last week, but I thought we'd bring him up again just because, hey, you know, and there were a lot of other guys that they brought in that could really have a really high impact as well. But Jonathan, I know you're a big UF guy, and I don't know if you were on to talk about Grayson Howard. He was kind of the big headline linebacker. Did you have any other thoughts on him or any other recruits in this transfer portal that you wanted to highlight?
Power is a stud. They call him Pup, and for where he's from, he's a Jacksonville kid. I mean, he's a stud. He was probably Florida's best linebacker a year ago. He battled a ton of injuries. And Florida's linebacker room, they have three NFL guys. So he didn't leave because he wasn't talented. Florida has Miles Graham might be the best linebacker in the country next year. Yeah. He's a stud. I mean, when I saw that, I thought for sure he was going to transfer somewhere in the Power Four. And the fact that he went to USF, I mean, that's huge. He's awesome. That's your next, you know, kind of Matt Harris kind of guy right there for sure. I love what they're doing in the trenches. That's how football teams are built, in the trenches. They have some pretty epic names with Cash Hudson on the O-line and Major Dillard on the D-line.
Those are two A-grade names. Indeed. Yeah.
So Cash Hudson, it's hard to find offensive linemen in the portal, and it's even harder to get them to come to USF because a lot of times those high-program guys are going to get them. So this is an extreme example, but the starting tackle at Colorado, he's a five-star freshman last year. He entered the transfer portal, and bidding for him started. The fact that we're talking about this in college sports or something, but the bidding for him started at $2 million for a tackle.
Yeah, it's insane.
So, wow. It's hard to get offensive linemen out of the portal just because there's very few and they're such a hot commodity. So the fact that USF was able to do some work there is a big deal, I think. And, you know, that's how games are won. The fact that USF was able to compete in the trenches against Florida last year and hold up pretty well as you can against Miami, who has the best D-line still in football with their two, I think, first-round edge rushers. But, you know, that's how teams are built. So I saw Van Buren play a lot at Mississippi State before he went to LSU last year. He started a ton of games there because Blake Shapley was hurt for them. And obviously, I've watched a ton of SEC football. You know, he's a smaller version of Byron Brown. He runs around a ton, can make a lot of throws, but you know, it'll be interesting to see. Both quarterbacks have that dual threat ability, so it's obviously what Hartline wants and kind of this new scheme. And, you know, we saw some Ohio State guys transfer with him. I don't know if I thought we were going to get some more, but I saw at least two, if I'm not mistaken, right? At least two kind of transfer with him. So we'll see. I would hope that USF's not done, because just like any good G5 program, they got just ravaged by the portal. So I would like for them to add maybe a little bit more in the secondary. I know they added two guys, that we've talked about a little bit, but you know, you got to be deep at that position. You got to have multiple guys that you just kind of rotate through, and you know, it's going to be really hard to replace Shuler and Harris. They did a really good job with Pup Howard. I don't think that gets like an A++ from me, but who are the other guy you're going to put with them? You know, do you like you have in the building, or are we also looking kind of in this last batch of portal guys to try to get another linebacker? So those will be the things I'm looking at, as well as continuing to try to find just as many guys in the trenches as you can.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love that you brought up the linebacker position specifically, because, I mean, Grayson Howard, really, really impressive. You know, I'm really excited to see what he can do. But you mentioned the injury history, you know, so that's a bit of a concern. And they do, like you said, they have some internal options. I know Rodney Hill is one of them, not to be confused with the Rodney Hill that's also a running back for Arkansas. I know when you Google Rodney Hill, the Arkansas guy is the first one that comes up. But yeah, Rodney Hill is one of them, and Xavier Hamilton's another one. Both of those guys could be key roles. And as far as I'm aware, neither has entered the transfer portal, at least as far as I can tell. You know, so that'll be really interesting. It's going to be that's probably a big position to watch. And like you said, cornerback room. I mean, it seems like USF has had a really solid cornerback room the past few years. You know, so that, I mean, you go back to was it Kayvon Webster? That was the guy that played for the Broncos, right, and won the Super Bowl with them. He's like a special teams captain. He was a USF guy. So, you know, they've had a few, you know, in the context of USF, they've had a few NFL players from that position. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll see. And like you said, a few Ohio State guys with Rodgers, the receiver, Musab and I talked a lot about last week, because he's a Wiregrass Ranch guy. Mm-hmm. So that's really fun. And then CJ Hicks, probably one of the most talented guys USF's ever had in their program. He's probably going to be more of a pass rusher type of guy though. So we'll see how they line him up. But yeah, there's still a lot of transfer portal left. There's still a lot of guys I'm sure that USF's looking at. So yeah, should be really interesting. And you know, moving away from the transfer portal stuff, Josh Salazar, he was the Leroy Selman captain of the team this past season. And he got an invitation to the Hula Bowl. So it's kind of a senior bowl type of event. He's going to showcase his talent for the NFL, but mostly for the CFL and the UFL scouts. So it should be really interesting to see how his career progresses professionally. Keep the good fight going, because seems like a nice guy. Obviously, a guy that gets that kind of recognition is a high character individual. So best of luck to him. He was really great this past year, a really big contributor to that defensive line that was really good. Like Jonathan, like you said, able to compete with Florida and Miami, mostly Florida. But it was a really tremendous game. But moving on to the basketball, and we'll start with the women's team because they have been on fire. They have been on one. They took a W versus Memphis and a W versus UTSA. They dominated UTSA 70-53. But we'll start with the Memphis one. Musab, I'll start with you, man. What were kind of the highlights performances from this past – from two games ago, I guess, when USF played the Memphis Tigers?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, shout out Katie Davidson, racked up 20 points. Stephanie Ingram with 13 assists, which was her career high. And then Carla Brito, just, again, making another impact out there, all-around effort. 14 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and a block as well. So this was 5 Bulls, you know, racked up in double figures for the first time this season against Memphis. So it just shows you, you know, the kind of depth we have beyond just our starters. The bench added 17 points themselves. So it's just exciting to see. I feel like, you know, obviously there are a couple of big names, but I always feel like every game there's one name that wasn't one name that wasn't big like the week before now is, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like we see that every week.
Yeah, it's been really exciting to watch kind of a new name step up. Like you said, every week it's someone different. And that game versus Memphis was really impressive. And then they took on UTSA, who's been a little bit struggling as of late. And they took home the 70-53 game. And my goodness, they just kind of jumped out to that massive lead and held on to it for most of the game. And at one point it was 11-3 UTSA, but they just turn around and it's 47-22 USF. So it was just a really, really impressive performance for the Bulls. Musab, I'll throw this right back at you because you've been on with this women's basketball stuff. Any highlight performances from UTSA, like players to watch maybe going in and maybe how they did?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, the two big players that, you know, were to watch were, first of all, Cheyenne Rowe, you know, averaged 12 points per game, almost 13, about almost 9 rebounds per game. She's a double-digit threat. She's basically kind of like their big man, big woman, kind of their beast inside. So we were able to slow her down. Most, if not all, of her 8 points were in that sloppy third quarter that we had against UTSA. She is a rebound machine, though. She racked up 10. But you know, I'm going to tell you this, though. She wasn't anywhere near that, you know, in the first half. It's just once we started missing, of course, you know, someone's got to get the rebounds for them. So that was her. But the other one was, you know, looking at Ariana Hardaway. She is, you know, kind of the floor general. She leads the team with steals, runs their offense, 10 points per game, almost 5 assists per game. So, and also the daughter of Penny Hardaway. So, cool. The big thing was to, you know, disrupt her with all sorts of pressure. And we slowed her down for the most part, you know, with only 4 points, but she was cooking on the assists. Again, probably half of them were from that, you know, sloppy third quarter. I have to say, although it didn't really look like it, you know, on the kind of box score, I mean, UTSA had a lot of chances in the third quarter that they just weren't able to get in. But, I mean, they had a solid third quarter. We were just playing a little too fast. You know, sure. Even the commentators themselves were saying, hey, listen, USF is such a big lead right now. They can control the pace of this game. So, right. But, you know, sometimes it happens because we picked it up in the fourth quarter, though. So, Those are, you know, those are the kind of two big names. You know, they're role players, you know, both dished in 13 each. But for what it's worth, you know, if you look at it, you know, 18 turnovers for us versus their 19. And again, that you can clearly tell those turnovers did not come from that fiery first half. So, again, it was a weird third quarter. But look, and then, you know, because of that, you know, they ended up, you know, outstealing us, you know, and I saw it myself. So had we displayed a little bit of a better, you know, third quarter or something like that, this could have been a more of a bigger win. But I'll take it for what it's worth. I mean, I really like to see, you know, just all sorts of players, you know, just stepping up. I feel like, you know, as we mentioned, Stephanie Ingram was doing a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, 14 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals, 2 blocks. So, and I have to, you know, and as I was saying, Carter, you know, every game someone, you know, pops up out of nowhere and, you know, balls out. Well, this game it was Jelena Bulajicic, the freshman from Montenegro. 15 points, went 5 for 5 on all threes in the first half, even snuck in 2 assists. So that was probably, I think, the highlight of that game, and because it was also international night as well. So that had a there little bit of a to it as well.
Yeah, the USF women's team was cooking, and now up next they've got a 3-15 Wichita State team at home. Jonathan, you've played college basketball, so I'm going to kind of – I always love to ask you kind of these big picture questions. How does a team like that, that, you know, USF first in the AAC right now, you know, they've played really, really well. How do you prepare for a team that's 0-5 in AAC play? They're having a really rough year. They lost to Florida Atlantic by 24. They lost to East Carolina by 17. How do you prepare for a team that is floundering when you're on the opposite end of that spectrum?
No, it's a great question. Every team has to deal with it at some point if, you know, you're a good team like USF women's team is. But it's playing within your standard. Like you hear that all the time. It's that you can never let your standard drop. You know, sure. Why play down to your competition, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about this even in high school with our kids. You know, like you have to play to our standard. If you don't play to our standard, you can lose anyone. Right. So, you know, USF women's team has a standard. You know, you don't go out and schedule South Carolina in the non-conference that they did if you don't have a standard to win the conference. And right. You don't win the conference by losing to 3 and whatever Wichita State. It just doesn't happen. So the fear in those games for me would always be, I know practice would be hell if we lost. So I know that, you know, and it's not that, you know, you don't want to be the one that loses to a team like that, right? Like Wichita is, I mean, obviously their men's team has a rich tradition, but you know they're going to be doing everything they can to turn their season around. And not only USF women's team especially, it's always going to get every team's best shot because of the success they've had in recent years. So it's just playing up to your standard. You almost – when you have a talent gap like that, and it's the same thing when South Carolina plays USF, for example, in a separate situation. You know, you can never let your play reach to where the other team's playing at. You need to continue to play at your high level, and kind of everything else will take care of themselves, or at least it should. But if you don't play that high level, look, these are all Division I athletes at the end of the day. Like anyone can get anyone. Especially in basketball. So, you know, USF's so that I'm sure that message has been sent. I'm sure don't look at the records message has been sent. And good teams like USF is, don't let that happen, you know. So I wouldn't expect anything out of the ordinary as long as they play up to their standard.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good news is that USF's standard is kind of getting contributions. I mean, Musa brought it up a bunch. We've talked about it a lot. Getting contributions from different people every week. You know, there's a different woman stepping up and doing their thing. You know, every week it seems like there's just a different person that we're highlighting. So, Jonathan, have you kind of played on those types of teams that are like really well balanced, as opposed to like, you know, you've got the star scorer that kind of has to rerun all the action for them. But instead, this team seems to be really centered around team basketball. What's it like playing on a team like that where it's just everyone kind of eats type of thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, my sophomore year team was a lot like that. I think we had 4 or 5 guys average double figures.
Oh, there you go.
And it's nice because any guy can go for 20 any given night. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if player C who averages 10.6 points per game all of a sudden has 24, no one's looking at him like, wow, you know, what a game. You know, it's like, okay, you know, he's been doing that, you know. And I know the teams that are guard, like one player centric, for example, like USF plays ECU, men's team plays ECU coming up, and they have a guy averaging 23, you know, or whatever, this mid-20s. that's no knock to and ECU is not a very good team. That's no knock to the player or ECU, but it's almost better to have five guys averaging double figures. Like USF's team has men's team has five guys averaging 12 or more. Like that, that's electric. They have to be one of the few teams in the country that has that. You see a lot of guys averaging double digits, five guys averaging 10, five guys averaging 12 or more. Like that's elite level stuff in terms of ball distribution and scoring the basketball. So it's a good question because, like, for example, like Trey Young at Oklahoma averaged like 27 and 11, you know? So like you can be successful with teams like that. But, you know, last year, obviously Florida won the national championship. Walter Clayton averaged 17 and a half, 18 points per game, but Elijah Martin averaged 14. Will Richard averaged 13 and a half. You know, Alex Gondon averaged 11. So, you know, very rarely do you see teams that have immense amount of success with one guy averaging a ton of points. You know, college basketball especially, it's just such a team game. So the more guys you can get involved, the more times it's like, oh, you know, our fifth starter just had 20 and knocked down four threes. It's like, yeah, you know, we've seen that in practice. He's like that for real. So, yeah, that's what I said. That's a good question. It's a great question. And I don't really necessarily think there's a right answer, but I do know that my sophomore year team when I was in college was the best team we had there. So, you know, it kind of goes on. And my junior year, we were very similar in terms of having guys that scored a lot like that. So, yeah, there's the more guys that you can keep happy, I guess, the better. And just shows that, like, you know, we're an unselfish basketball team and it doesn't really matter who takes the spotlight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what's great about USF basketball in general right now. But, you know, so the women's and the men's team, you know, they're both doing it kind of similar style, kind of a number one option by committee, if you will, you know, not necessarily one person every night taking the whole, you know, putting the backpack on, you know, it's kind of a different person and, you know, they're distributing it pretty evenly. So that's been really fun to watch. Like you said, the men's basketball team is playing well too, but before we transition to them, Musab, do you have anything on Wichita State? Cause I know we're talking about 3-15, like Jonathan just emphasized, like how important it is to still play to your standard. But like Jonathan said, they're D1 athletes. You know, they've still got people they can get you at any time. So who are those people that could potentially stand out for Wichita State if the crap hits the fan, to say a cleaner version?
Absolutely. No. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this 3-15 Wichita State has been having a rough year. They're on a six-game losing streak. They're just, unfortunately, I have to say, they're just not good. They're bad. They're inefficient. I mean, they're getting outplayed even in conference games. They're only averaging around 60 points per game while giving up like 66 plus, 38% from the field goal, only 26% from the three-pointer. You know what I'm saying? So last three, for example, what was it? Yesterday? Yeah, yesterday they got ran over by Florida Atlantic, 64-88. Got ran over by ECU, 56-83. And then got ran over by Temple, 50-70. So just big losses. But they still have some, you know, talent, of course. You know, I don't want to just put them down either. I mean, let's start off with Jayla Harding, their lead scorer. You know, she can get buckets, needs to be contained, averaging 13 points per game, probably the main offensive threat. Then there is Abby Cater, second in scoring. She's had a couple of hot games, earlier this season. But that was against, you know, outside of conference competition, and it's just always up in the air when it comes to those kind of things. And then there's Treasure Thompson, their, you know, lead rebounder. Doesn't really dominate the paint. I feel like shouldn't be too much of an issue. This game is very winnable for USF. Okay, I think they're like 25 negative. I don't know what kind of favorites they are. Massive. It's massive. I don't think there is a line because I don't think. Yeah, I'll tell you this. I know they're not on Hard Rock. I checked that actually just because the guys are. But anyways, no, it should be fine. Look, we play tight defense. We locked down Harding and Cater early, you know, force them into tough shots, crash the boards, get those second chance points. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. You don't ever want to see another team get, you know, offensive rebounds and just pressure them. Same kind of things like we did against UTSA. I mean, just fire on all cylinders, push the tempo. You know, I feel like once we get hot, we can really kind of get to them. But the biggest thing that I wanted to kind of chime in on, you know, the kind of, you know, playing bad competition and, you know, the mental factor, which is that us and Rice, and, you know, I want to give a shout out to the commentators as well who brought this issue up, which was, we're already the American Athletic, you know, we don't already have that kind of big name. You know, we're not, you know, we're G5, and it's going to be us or Rice who's going to be in this NCAA tournament. You know, they've already kind of said these are the only two teams in the AAC as of right now who look like they have a shot to be relevant. So, yeah, right now we're 68 in the net ranking. So a loss like this is just going to hurt you. In fact, it's going to embarrass you. You know what I'm saying? Right. It just, you know, you're going to look at them. Oh, you know, the committee is going to be like, ooh, do we sneak in USF? Well, oh, no, USF lost to the Wichita, the 3-15 Wichita State Shockers. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So won't happen, but then again, anything's possible.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you brought that up because that brings up another interesting point, which, Jonathan, I'll pose this question to you. How much does this kind of feel, how much does it kind of feel like college football almost in some cases with men's and women's basketball when you're playing in these kind of mid-major conferences where, you know, you're not going to get multiple at-large bids, you're not the SEC, you're not the Big Ten, et cetera. So does it kind of, you know, are you kind of white knuckling a little bit if you're, you know, if you're the USF women's basketball team, like you can't, like Mustafa said, you can't afford a loss like this. So how much similar, how many similarities are there between like college football where like if you lose a stupid game, like that could be your season. So do you see any comparison there?
I see a little bit, but I play devil's advocate. I played the opposite. Like USF women's team is really good. They're not getting an at-large bid. They just aren't. So they have to win their conference. So they could lose to Wichita and it wouldn't matter because in the obviously it wouldn't matter. But in the long term, and that's what people love, including me, about college basketball, as long as they're playing well by the first women's tournament is the week before. So by the first week in March, when their conference tournament is, that's all that matters. And that's the big separator. Now, if you're high major college basketball like Kentucky right now, Kentucky's on the verge of missing the tournament. And Kentucky has a $20 million roster in men's basketball. So, yeah, they're white knuckling every single game. But, you know, I'm not going to come out here and say USF women's team would never get an at-large bid. If they run the table in conference with their non-conference that they did, they might, but it's unlikely. So for USF men's team and USF women's team, you know, you never say it doesn't matter because every single game matters. You have a chance to improve during every single game. But, you know, your season really comes down to 5 days in the second weekend of March to see if you're going to go play in March. So in March Madness in the NCAA tournament. So I agree with everything that was said, but it's also kind of cool to play that devil's advocate to say, like, you know.
No, I'm with you. But I have to say one thing, though, is – and I feel like this is really only – the case for USF, not that they're completely a small, but what kind of you know mid-tier program has so many top-tier opponents like USF? I actually have to check other NCAA women basketball schedules, but I mean, what South Carolina, UConn? I understand, you know, we got embarrassed, but
and Duke, they beat Duke, right?
And Duke, beat Duke. So it's like, you know, we face tougher competition. So, you know, that's why we got a couple L's on our record book. Otherwise, I'll tell you this, dude, if we played the same opponents like Wichita State, I feel like we'd have a great record. So
you're exactly right.
But then again, I mean, I don't know how many of these small things. I doubt the committee is going to think about the USF women's basketball team's first early games in the season and how they played these top tier teams. Who knows? Maybe, I don't know. But
if you ask the average committee member on the women's who builds a bracket, I would bet a lot of them don't even remember that USF beat Duke, you know, and I'm not here to throw shade, but it's unfortunate truth that, and to your point, it might help that USF had such a good year last year because now they're on people's radars. Like if this was last year and all of a sudden they have this great year, it's like, oh, like it happened with Boise State. If you guys remember when Kellen Moore was there and they went on that crazy run, like it took forever for them to kind of get that respect. And then all of a sudden they beat Georgia to open the season. And obviously what happened in the Oklahoma game was crazy, but unfortunately, it happens with USF men's team 2 years ago when they basically ran the table in conference. Right. And obviously, their non-conference, they didn't play. There are the men's version of South Carolina. You know, ironically, UConn's spectacular in both sports, in both men's and women's. But so, yeah, look, I'm not going to say it's out of the possibility, but if USF will probably have to win out to have an at-large bid, which is unfortunate, you know, it is. But so in that term, like, yeah, you kind of are white knuckling a little bit because you know that there's an outside chance that you could get an at-large. But, you know, if they lose, I don't have their schedule pulled up. I did a minute ago. But if you lose, like they lost to Rice. I know they lost to Rice.
Right.
The committee's going to knock them. But, you know, you could argue their loss to Rice is more detrimental than them playing UConn, you know, because Rice isn't some great team.
Right.
Again, I'm not an expert on Rice's women's basketball team, but you know they're not some power. But No, it's a great conversation because it goes on in both sports. And in men's, I think it's a little bit easier because in women's, and I'm so happy that women's basketball is starting to evolve to the talents more spread out. But very rarely in college do you see teams lose by, you know, like 60 or whatever. It's happening because there's so much talent at every level because men's basketball has been so popular for longer, right? It's just they're at different stages in their development. So that's why the A-10, for example, can be a four-bid league at times in college, in men's basketball, because there are so many more high-level players that can go to these lower-level schools. You know, and for the women's team, 10 years from now, we'll be talking about women's basketball like this. But they're just – remember, the WNBA is only 25 years old. They're 30 years old, whatever it is. So that progression toward the talent distribution is wider, is a little bit slower than it is for the men. So that
makes
it
harder. And the NIL is only like a year or two old too. So I think
that's – I don't know what the NIL is like in women's basketball. Yeah. You know, women's basketball is a non-profit sport. Like USF women's basketball is not bringing profit into the school. And, you know, they lose money. Every sport loses money except for football and some basketball programs. Like you could probably even bet that USF's men's basketball program loses money. You know, there's very few basketball programs that make money. So I'll be very surprised. And you're right about this. 10 years from now, the NIL for women's basketball for USF might skyrocket the better that they get.
Yeah, but I right wonder now, if UConn and like South Carolina got – that's a money in the bank for these
guys. And that's the one. Like, I know UConn has good NIL because, you know, they've been good for 25 years. But, you know, as bad as it is, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, like UConn's women's team doesn't turn – if they do turn a profit, it's very small. You know, football is king. And it also goes to against USF because, well, University of Florida has a booster worth – three boosters worth $100 million that they can give whatever to. USF might have one. And now, if I'm that one booster, I want to see the football program succeed. And then once that football program succeeds, then it kind of trickles down to everywhere else. So it's not a shot at women's basketball or, you know, we'll talk about tennis later or whatever. But it's just kind of the facts, unfortunately. And what's kind of cool about the position we're in is we kind of get to see the women's game develop like we didn't get to see with the men's game. But because by the time we were fans, the men's game was already at an elite level. And the women's game is at that such a high level compared to what it was. Like, I remember watching the Final Four that was in Tampa when Mississippi State upset UConn and how big of a deal that was. And then they lost to Notre Dame. Watching that basketball compared to now is like watching, you know, the G League compared to high level NBA games now. Just the talent difference that's there now. So I loved it. And the game is going to continue to grow. But until then, it's going to be really hard for the American to be like a multi-bid league in women's basketball, just because the talent distribution is not there yet. But it will be one day, and it will be soon. But in terms of all the mid-majors, man, it'd be hard for us for someone to have a better case than USF, though, to kind of get an at-large bid like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we'll just
off the rails a little bit, but
no, that was great. No, I love it. We're talking about, you know, women's and men's basketball, because, you know, both of these teams potentially, if, like you said, everything goes well, have a chance to be at least in the conversation for an at-large bid or like for a conference bid. So it's, you know, it's important conversations to have, and we'll continue to have them because, you know, this thing isn't going away. It's not going to change this year. It's probably not going to change next year either. So, like you said, it's a really interesting thought conversation and all that.
Sure. And also, how many podcasts are covering American Conference women's basketball?
None. Where else are you going to get that deep dive about
this? This is oh yeah, dude. I know there was. I've seen a couple of like hardcore like MAC like football accounts, like Maction and all that. Maction, so I feel like it's the same thing here. Mm-hmm. So man.
Hey, you never know. I love it. I love it. But moving our focus to the men's basketball team, they played University of North Texas this past weekend as well as Tulsa. So they had a couple of games, and they won both. The UNT game, a little bit of a nail-biter, 74-70, definitely came down to the stretch run. Wes Ennis, obviously, he's been the story of the season so far. He struggled quite a bit. UNT's perimeter defense, though, we knew this going in. They play some stifling stuff. So he struggled a little bit, but Isaiah Nelson had his usual double-double with 17 points, and every other starter had double-digit scoring. So we were talking about the women's basketball team having that balanced approach. The men's basketball team has that balanced approach. So it was really interesting, and it was a really great game. And USF came out on top. You know, they went to Denton and took care of business. The free throw line, as usual, a big, big factor for USF. They had 36 free throw attempts compared to UNT's 20, and they also converted them at a 75% rate as opposed to UNT, which couldn't crack 50%. They went 9 for 20 from the free throw line. So that was really the big thing. And it was just a big time defensive battle. I mean, we've seen USF put up these monster point totals. So 74 points, a bit of a modest point total. So it was a really interesting finish. Obviously, Isaiah Nelson came through with the two free throws, and as well as Jones, he also sealed it too. So really some key defensive stops there at the end. And then moving on to the Tulsa game, they were much more dominant in this one, 93-78. Wes Ennis, he was back to being Wes Ennis. He had 32 points, 10 threes. Really ridiculous stuff. Nelson, surprise, surprise, a double-double, 22 and 14, 10 of 12 from the field, 12th double-double of the year, streak of six straight. So he's second in the NCAA in double-doubles. Like, Isaiah Nelson, man, he's cooking. And the team had a historic shooting night, too. They set a program record for three-point attempts and three-pointers made. It's the second ever. So really fun stuff. Any overarching thoughts, Musab, from these past two games for the men's basketball team? Oh, did I lose you there, Musab?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think you had lost me for a second. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. I just had a question about any overarching thoughts from these past 2 years or past two games for the USF men's basketball team against UNT and Tulsa.
Just that. Dude, once our team gets hot, I mean, I feel like it's game over. And I think, you know, the thing that, you know, I feel like we were all expecting was, yeah, UNT locked us down. I mean, that was a neck and neck sort of battle. But yeah, we're definitely one of the hotter teams in the, American Athletic Conference. And, hoping is, kind of just see what else we got, and Isaiah Nelson has been nothing but exciting. I think the USF basketball account has been posting. I think he's been their blue collar, player of the game, three or four times in a row. And I think even their own account was expressing frustration, oh, this guy again, kind of as a joke, just because he's always taken off. You know what I'm saying? So that's just nice to know. I mean, it's so happy, so refreshing to see, Wes Ennis is back on fire. Pinion and the rest of the guys, CJ Brown as well, just all contributing. So, I'm excited to see, what we do for the rest of the season, but it's been looking pretty darn good so far. I mean, just overall, men and women's basketball are just very exciting, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. Their next matchup is against ECU. And Jonathan's kind of a similar situation to the Wichita State game. They're actually playing right now as we're talking. I believe they are up, 17 to 11, 12 minutes left in the first half. So, pay attention to that as well. They have a 95% chance, or 96 if you round up, percent chance to win, 4% chance to lose, for those who are quick with math. So it's going to be a really interesting matchup. And Jonathan, you brought up ECU, kind of their Jordan Riley is that guard that you were talking about. Did you have any other thoughts on Jordan Riley and his, because he's averaging 22 points a game on a bad team, but that's still a really impressive performance. So any other thoughts on ECU or Jordan Riley specifically?
Yeah, anytime you see a guy like that, I immediately wonder, okay, where'd he come from? Because I doubt he started at ECU. And, he's a high major guy. I mean, he's from Georgetown, and Georgetown have a storied history, but they've been pretty bad as of late. And, he's the second year at ECU, which I also says a lot, second year in the system. And his points per game has jumped right around 8 points. So that's a pretty drastic jump. You'll have starters this year in the American that don't even average 8 points per game. This guy jumped up his scoring production by over 8 points. So, I don't want to speak too much on a game that will already be over by a lot of the time these people listen. But right. if you did watch the game, don't be surprised if USF wins by 10, but Jordan Riley has 25. And it might be on inefficient shooting. It might be 25 on 10 of 25 shooting. But, he's a talented guy that you can tell his second year in the system has kind of really thrived.
Yeah, absolutely. Jordan Riley's definitely a name to watch out for. Tybo Bailey, he's a really good perimeter defender. He's very fun to watch. Anyone else, Mr. Musab Tariq from ECU, that we should be watching out for tonight's game? And I'm sure we'll talk about it next week as well.
Yeah, man. Giovanni Emejuru is their big man. Just, you know, got to lock him down. I'll probably just say, yeah, I mean, he's racking up, yeah, 14 points per game, almost near double-double kind of, you know, player. So just lock him down. He is known to be foul-prone, so hopefully we take advantage of that. So, but I'll tell you this, being that we are such huge favorites, hopefully we won't have to worry about any of these kind of things. But it's the same kind of thing, I feel like, you know, that we had for, you know, for Wichita State and our women's basketball team. It's just, you know, we know what we have to do, not play sloppy. Of course, they're going to have some, you know, key players to lock down. And, you know, that's all it really comes down to. I'll probably say I'm more worried about, yeah, Jordan Riley than Giovanni Amajuru. As long as we just, you know, keep it clean, you know, as long as we also don't get in foul trouble, you know, we can just run away with the lead.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely going to be a fun game. It's at home. It's at the Yingling Center. So, you know, if people are listening, then they should be at the Yingling Center. You know, stop listening to us. Go to the game. No, I'm just kidding. Stick around. But, yeah, to finish out the episode, we're going to be talking about some tennis. The men's tennis season, they have kind of a split season sort of thing, which is interesting. They have the spring season coming up starting January 17th. They're going to be playing, Jonathan, your Florida Gators. Should be interesting. And then the following day, it's a quick turnaround for the War on I-4 rivalry against UCF. So Hugo Carr, he's back. He's the American Athletic Conference Player of the Year from 2025. So he's going to be looking to continue his dominance. And then in women's tennis, they're playing FSU on January 17th to open their season. And then they turn around and join the men's team and play UCF. So we'll also be talking about this throughout their season as well. The USF women's team last year, they lost in the opening round of the AAC to Memphis, and the men's lost in the semis to Rice, just to kind of give some background. But we'll talk about that more as their season progresses, because they're just getting started and we've got a lot to talk about with them as well. So definitely stick around for that. Definitely stay tuned in. Hit that like and subscribe button if you like what you're here and if you like what you heard. Shout out to my two co-hosts, Jonathan Shields and Musab Tariq. They made my job incredibly easy. Really love doing the show with y'all. And we'll be back next week to talk some more USF athletics. But until then, and as always, go Bulls.
Go Bulls. Go Bulls,
baby.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.